From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is The Local Edition, and I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Coming up, it is June 1st. Happy Pride Month. We're also just a little more than a month away from the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. You know, folks across the country are celebrating throughout the year. What are they doing in Coshecton to celebrate? Opening a time capsule, among other things. Patricio Rabayo talks to Coshecton's town historian, coming up in the second half of the program. Plus, Kimberly Izar reports on the proposed solar development in Damascus Township. That story in a moment. We start with news from Albany, where, believe it or not, less than a week after finally passing the state budget, lawmakers in Albany now have less than 1 week left to the legislative session for the year. As WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind reports, it's going to be a busy final week at the state capitol.
Restrictions on ticket scalping, higher deposits on bottles and cans, and changing the state constitution to let New York enter the national wars over congressional redistricting. All of it is on the table in Albany before the state Senate and Assembly wrap up their work for the year. Lawmakers are planning to consider hundreds of bills this week, some small, some big. Assembly Minority Leader Ed Ra is a Nassau County Republican. He says there are lots of balls in the air and that Democrats control what comes up for a vote.
It's unpredictable. Things that you think are dead come back to life. Things that you think are happening end up not happening.
Lawmakers are scheduled to adjourn their session on Thursday.
Now let's dive a little deeper into just one of those final legislative week issues, redistricting. One Hudson Valley lawmaker is speaking out against potential gerrymandering. Again, WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind.
Congressmember Mike Lawler is at the New York State Capitol denouncing changes to the process of drawing district boundaries. The Republican lawmaker represents a competitive seat in the Hudson Valley. He says he'll be targeted if New York enters the national redistricting wars.
The Democrats in New York have tried multiple times to change the maps, multiple times to get a partisan advantage in New York because they have absolute power.
Democrats say they're responding to changes in red states like Texas and Florida that favor the GOP. Top New York lawmakers want to amend the state constitution to allow a new map for the 2028 elections. They may also remove anti-gerrymandering provisions. In Albany, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
In other New York State Capitol news, it's now up to Governor Hochul to decide whether to legalize small plug-in solar panels in the state. WNYC's John Campbell reports.
State lawmakers approved a bill known as the Sunny Act. It'll let anyone use a plug-in panel without having to get approval from the local utility company first. The panels will have to be tested by a safety lab, and they can't produce more than 1,200 watts of juice. Assemblymember Emily Gallagher is a Democrat from Brooklyn who sponsored the measure.
This kind of balcony solar has really taken off in urban centers, and I know New York City's itching to do it, as well as several of the other cities in the state.
A spokesperson for Governor Hochul says she'll review the legislation. In Albany, I'm John Campbell for the New York Public News Network.
And big thanks to our partners at the New York Public News Network for those reports. Well, let's stay on the issue of solar power, but move the conversation to Northeast Pennsylvania, because a proposed utility-scale solar facility in Wayne County is drawing mixed reactions from local residents and environmental advocates. The proposal involves building more than 36,000 solar panels in Damascus and Oregon townships. Similar debates about large-scale solar projects are happening across the country as states try to balance development and clean energy goals. Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar reports.
Along Amy Road in Damascus, Pennsylvania, sprawling fields of yellow wildflowers overlook the rolling terrain. Tim Dennis has owned a butcher shop just off the dirt road for 15 years. He says he loves the people that make the area feel like home.
This area has a rich history of farms. There are still active farms around here. Right across from my butcher shop, there's the Lukens Farm. They have beef animals. Just up the road on Calkins Road is the Bryant Farm. There's a creamery there also.
And it's here where a developer wants to build an 18-megawatt solar energy facility in Wayne County. The project would border Oregon and Damascus townships on about 103 acres of land. The developer, WA Coshecton 2 LLC, owned by Ampliform, says the utility-scale project could generate enough electricity to power about 3,000 homes each year. But Dennis strongly opposes the plan. He says it would change the landscape and fabric of the community for good.
It would affect the rural residential. It's not, this type of stuff is not meant to be rural residential. These are farmland fields that have been hayed forever and farmed forever and are still being farmed, but that will no longer happen and be the case with it complete solar field. And there's 36,500 solar panels proposed.
Pennsylvania has been aggressively trying to increase its renewable energy production over the years. Dennis says he's not opposed to solar and renewable energy. He knows it's important for the state. But where it goes is an important part of the equation.
The reason that there's proposing this out in the country is because they get less opposition. There's only a few landowners that it's going to affect. And they're all against it also.
Pennsylvania has long relied on fossil fuels to power its energy through coal, natural gas, and oil. The state is the third largest energy supplier to other states in the country. But its heavy reliance on fossil fuels wasn't always the case. The state was once considered a leader in renewable energy in the early 2000s and was one of the earliest adapters to mandate alternative energy standards. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro pledged a 30 by 30 campaign during his 2024 run for governor that 30% of the energy sold in the state would come from renewable energy. Sharon Pilar is the founder and executive director at the Pennsylvania Solar Center. She says the state's rollout has been slow.
We were one of the first states to have these portfolio standards, and then we fell way behind. And that's still our policy. We've surpassed that goal. And now we're really the worst state in the whole Eastern Corridor as far as per capita amount of solar. So that's kind of where we are right now.
To go from kind of being one of the leaders when it comes to renewable energy to kind of falling so far behind, like what happened in between those years?
Well, mostly it's a political problem, a big energy state. You know, we always have been, first oil, then coal, and now natural gas. Pennsylvania has that mindset, that worldview around fossil fuels, and they have dominated our political atmosphere too. And that's been the major problem in Pennsylvania, to move renewables forward, even while the rest of the world sees that as the cheapest, fastest way to build new energy.
Barbara Arundel is the director of Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, an environmental advocacy nonprofit in Pennsylvania. She says solar farms aren't perfect, but they're necessary as electricity costs skyrocket.
Demand for electricity, certainly in this country, is increasing and is proposed to continue increasing. And if the supply doesn't increase, two things will happen. The prices will go up and the grids will become unstable. So we need additional supply, and that can be provided by either renewables, which are the most cost-effective way to generate electricity, or fossil fuels. And fossil fuels cause global warming, environmental destruction, geopolitical instability, and more. And renewables, well, they're not perfect, but by far way better to generate electricity. And better is better.
Arundel says solar projects have to be planned with care and caution to minimize any dangers to homes and the environment.
If it's not regulated properly, you can have damage from clear cutting, from herbicide use to prevent plants from growing underneath it. You can have runoff problems and so forth. But it really sounds like there's a pretty good grasp of what safe requirements are needed by the conditional use requirements.
Wayne County isn't alone in this fight. Similar debates around building large-scale solar is playing out in communities across the country as states try to balance responsible development and their clean energy goals. But Bill Shaughnessy says this proposed solar project, which would cost about $33 million, just doesn't meet Pennsylvania standards. He's one of the homeowners whose properties would be affected by the project. His grandparents started coming up to Northeast Pennsylvania in the 1940s. And by 1971, they bought a home full time.
It's a beautiful piece of land. It's like 230 acres, you know, with streams and ponds and eagles and otters and you name it. It's all running around up there. So, you know, as a kid, I would go, my grandparents had a place there. And every weekend, I couldn't wait to go up to my Nana and Pop's place and, you know, stay there for the weekend and just run around those woods. I those woods like the back of my hand because I literally grew up in them.
To construct the project, landowners would have to lease a portion of their land to the developer. But so far, Shaughnessy says the majority of residents have rejected the lease offer. Like Dennis, Shaughnessy says he recognizes the state's need for renewable energy. But he and others strongly oppose the plan for a number of reasons, he says. Depreciation of property value, poor planning, stormwater runoff, and most importantly, its impact on the environment.
Solar field in that particular area is not environmentally sound at all. And it actually sits at the headwaters of a protected stream, which flows right down to the Calkins Creek and eventually into the Delaware. And there's a lot of questions with that, not the least of which is the wildlife. I have eagles. All of our neighbors have eagles. There's actually eagle nests on some of the neighbors' property. They roost in the trees on my property. They roost in the trees where they're going to be cutting for these solar panels. I have a big problem with that.
At a conditional use hearing on May 20th in Damascus, residents packed the town's municipal building with others waiting to get inside. Residents raised similar concerns to Shaughnessy, notably the amount of trees and woodlands that would have to be cleared for the project. Zoning ordinances in Damascus says a project can remove no more than 25% of trees or woodlands on the project's property. But residents allege that the amount is actually much more than that, and that developers are combining Oregon and Damascus township acreage to meet the requirement. Plus, the proposed area has wetlands, lots of them. The developer identified about 11 wetlands on about 43 acres of the project area. Now the project heads to the township's Board of Supervisors. Ed LeGarin, zoning officer for Damascus Township, says supervisors have until mid-July, or 45 days since the project's May conditional use hearing, to decide if they want to approve or deny a conditional use.
The next step would be a land development plan, which they have to do all their NPDES would be secret over in New York, where they have to account for every bit of water that hits the property. How are they going to deal with it?
Okay.
How is it going to run off? What are the effects on wildlife, vegetation, those kinds of things? And afterwards, for maintaining it so that it doesn't erode and create problems in the water system.
Sarah Dunn is the Pennsylvania Rural Organizing Associate for Solar United Neighbors. She says she often sees rural Pennsylvanians pushing back against some of the solar arrays, part of it due to misinformation.
My heart can imagine where that's coming from, is the reality that Pennsylvania in the past has been such a leader in energy production, whether it was coal or natural gas. And at various points in time throughout that history, our rural communities here in the state have unfortunately seen some negative ramifications of extractive energy, whether that be land use or community health, health of families, et cetera. And so some of the things that I really want to communicate to my neighbors and to other Pennsylvanians is that solar works for us on so many levels. Solar works for our farmers, which is front and center in rural communities. It allows farmers to keep their land in their families, especially when there are financial hardships. We are finding that it allows them to pass it down to the next generation. We are finding that it allows farmers to diversify their agricultural portfolio, so to speak.
Some critics say that solar projects should prioritize going on rooftops and warehouses rather than valuable farmland and wildlife habitat. But Dunn argues that isn't enough.
But the reality is that we need, at this point, we need more power on the grid than just what our rooftops can allow. And unfortunately, with a lack of incentives right now to go solar, it's making it more and more difficult for individual households to go solar at this time.
It doesn't look like solar is going anywhere. In fact, most agree that it'll likely increase. But where the projects go and how it's built remain an open question, says Shaughnessy.
Solar farms are going to be popping up a lot. And I think we do have to be responsible when these things are planned out and where they go, not just because it's close to a power line, there's a lot of acreage. They really need to look at a lot of other things there, too.
In Liberty, I'm Kimberly Izar for Radio Catskill.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It's The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dolb. And in just 4.5 weeks, it'll be the 4th of July, 2026, 250 years since the nation declared its independence and started out as a nation on its own. And as part of our ongoing coverage of celebrations in our listening area, tonight we're going to find out what the town of Coshecton and its hamlets have planned for the 250th, including their kickoff event this weekend and the opening of a time capsule coming up in August. Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio spoke with Coshecton town historian Christina Snedeker just an hour ago.
First off, I'd like to say thank you to WJSF for this interview and helping spread the word about the many great events planned in the town of Coshecton as we celebrate America's 250th birthday. We're really excited. We have a bunch of things planned, and we're ready to have a good time and maybe learn some history and just enjoy. And I also like to thank my my town supervisor, the town clerk, and our fellow town board members who encourage the programs happening and keeping our rich history alive here in the town of Coshecton. So I'm excited to announce that Coshecton has a lot of great historical events. We have 5 different events happening this summer, all throughout our different hamlets of Coshecton, which include Skinner's Falls, Coshecton Center, Fosterdale, Lake Huntington, and Coshecton. All of the events will be free and open to the public. And we have a small group of energetic community members who are helping organizing all these events happening. The first event, which is happening soon, is happening this Sunday at 1 p.m. at the Coshecton Train Depot Station, located on Route 97 in Coshecton. We will be discussing the hamlet of Skinner's Falls and its history to the Delaware River. Light refreshments will be available, and we're also doing a passport that Coshecton's passport at each event. Stamp for attending, and then you'll be at the end of our event, the end of the summer, all the names will be in like a drawing, and you'll get to we'll pick names and see who wins something for our local businesses in the town of Coshecton. So we're excited about that. Our second event will take place on Sunday, June 21st at 1 p.m. at the Heinley's baseball field, which is located in Coshecton Center, and that will be all about the history of Coshecton Center with light refreshments after. And all are welcome. The third event will be Sunday, July 12th, 1 p.m. at the Coshecton Town Hall, the basement in the community room, which that will be the history of the hamlet of Fosterdale. And light refreshments will follow that program. And at each event, we're encouraging people to bring some pictures or things that will, if they want to share some history. So. And if you attend every event, you're going to get your passport stamped. So you don't want to forget, you know, to bring your passport so that we give you. Our fourth event, which will be on Sunday, August 9th, that's at 1 p.m. at the Coshecton Town Hall Community Room, also in the basement. That will be all about the history of Lake Huntington. And that will also be the opening of our 1976 Bicentennial Time Capsule. So we are really excited to see what we'll find inside. And that's an event you don't want to miss out. You know, we're hoping for a lot of community involvement and just have a good time.
Yeah.
And then our final event is on August 30th at 1 p.m. That's also a Sunday at the Coshecton Community Center. That was the former men's club of Coshecton inside the old Presbyterian Church. And that will talk about the history of the hamlet of Coshecton along the Delaware River. That too will have light refreshments and maybe even a special treat called the Uncle Bob Special. It's an ice cream sundae type of thing, might make an appearance. So you don't want to miss that. That's kind of something fun. But yeah, we're looking forward to a good time, you know, and we hope all our community members come out and support us, have a good time, learn some history, maybe share some, bring some pictures to share or whatnot. So we're excited.
Yeah, you know, it's America's 250th anniversary, the signing of the Declaration of Independence, and it's great that, you know, all these towns and villages are sort of customizing or localizing it, you know, to their history. I'm interested in the time capsule. How long that's been in there? How long has it been buried?
Right. It's been buried for over 50 years. So the last time they buried it was in the bicentennial of the 1976. And so a lot of people, we had a lot of young children who were there for that, who are now much older now. So we're hoping they come out and see what was inside. I know we had a local photographer, his name was Harold Moss. He supposedly put in 300 pictures of around Coshecton. So we're hoping they all survive. You know, you never know. 50 years is a long time. And we're also hoping to reuse that time capsule to make a new one which will be open in the year 2076.
Oh, wow.
So in the next 50 years.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. I hope it does survive, because I know the county, when they had their time capsule and they found their time capsule, unfortunately, some of the things were destroyed because it wasn't completely airtight and some water inside.
Right. So it's a big mystery, you know. It's kind of like, oh, what are we going to find, you know? Or, you know, fingers crossed, everything will be great.
Yeah.
And, we're hoping. So that's the one with the Lake Huntington in August. So we're hoping for a lot of people, and hopefully the fire trucks will be out and our ambulance company can come out, and we really want the Girl Scouts are going to be helping. So it's going to be a great event. That's a don't want to miss that one. And then, as you said, our passport, everybody can get their passport stamped. We're planning a lot of cool things.
Where can folks pick up their passport? Is that town hall, or do we have to go to the first event?
Right, the passport is we're at the first event you could get it. And if you can't make the first event, you could get one at another event, mm-hmm. because the point is to get to the events, and maybe you'll get in a drawing. Who comes to events will be entered in a drawing to win some special prizes at the end of the summer. Yeah. And you can find a lot of our information we'll have on the town's webpage. And we also made some Facebook pages to be on the lookout for. That's helpful. And we're also putting out flyers in our town to get people involved and look for the event.
Yeah. Now, you know, it's great, like you said, every town and village is doing something to celebrate the celebration of 250th anniversary. And for you as a town historian, how does it feel to be sort of part of this own history of you know, recognizing what Coshecton, its past, and being able to be part of this celebration for the America's 250th.
Right, I am. I'm really excited. I have, like, deep roots here. So in the 76th bicentennial, my grandmother was very active in the bicentennial then. So it's kind of like a full family circle for me, you know. There was lots of pictures of her dressing up as, you know, a colonial woman and period time clothes. And so it's kind of a little emotional and exciting, and I'm excited for it. It's it's a special place we have here, and 250 years, you know, and there's still lots of history to be made and learn from things. So you're always learning something.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's fantastic. You have that connection to your ancestors who basically almost did the same job as you to help celebrate.
That's
great.
Yeah, I always think, I'm like, oh, Nana, give me some help here. You know, what can, you know, she's looking down, thinking, good job, doing okay. Yeah. I'm also, yeah.
No, go ahead.
Okay. No, I'm okay. Go ahead. Okay. Sorry.
No, I just want to say, as far as the events go, how was it planning all this? Was it, you know, I'm sure that this planning started obviously before this year. What things, you know, had to go into to plan all this?
Right, right. We've had a lot of planning events, getting our town people involved. A lot of them actually are what are involved in the previous one. Some of them were for 76, I kind of remember. We've had a lot of evening nights of planning what made people come to Coshecton, or, you know, what made this hamlet popular. So for like Huntington, a lot of it was the lake, you know, the lake of the boarding house. And Fosterdale, we have our the Coshecton-Newburgh Turnpike. So, and then Skinner's Falls being the Delaware River, and Skinner himself, the family, he went down the Delaware. So there's a lot of, you know, a little bit of history right there with that.
So now, like I said, the first event is coming up this Sunday, right?
Yes, this Sunday. Yep, 1 p.m. Yeah. We're excited about our passport, the stamps. You know, there might be a little freebie thing for people to come. There'll be some light refreshments. You know, people can have some questions and answers possibly, and definitely some old pictures of what it looked like in the past and what it even looks like today.
That's great. I said everyone's recognizing they're part of America's 250th event anniversary. And it seems like you have a great series of events coming up. And I definitely look forward to seeing that time capsule, because things like that, I just love to see or reveal what's inside and if it survived and what things are there that people forget they put in there. And that has to be exciting.
And as we're going to reuse the one we had. So we're hoping to put new stuff in, you know, people to put like, you know, whatever. Maybe some pictures of the town, you know, people, what they're doing now, and then need some coloring pages. Some of our youth can put some stuff in. You know, it'll be fun. So we're collecting things all throughout the summer too to put in the next time capsule. So
right.
Which will probably be sealed in December or so. Right. You know, for next.
The next time you open up that time capsule, I'll be 96 years old.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I think I might be 93. I'm like, oh my goodness. Yeah, crazy. It's crazy to think that. You're like, oh my goodness.
Knock on wood that we're both here. And if we are both here, I say right now, Christina, we'll do it in another interview. Okay.
Yes, that sounds good.
By then, 15 years from now, who knows? It will be all digital and we'll all be like in robots or something. Who knows?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, you never know, right? Yeah. I'm also involved on the Sullivan County Revolution 250 mm-hmm. Committee. So, and that's another great group of individuals that are helping organize events throughout Sullivan County with their 250. So like our next upcoming event for that will be the anniversary of the Minnesink Battlefield, the weekend of July 17th through 19th. So that's another thing to be for everyone to get excited for, and having a big event at the battlefield.
Yeah, that's great stuff. Yeah, we had John Conway not too long ago talk about all these events that are coming up, and he mentioned the Minnesink battle stuff. So
So we're looking forward to that one. That'll be a great, you know, lots of great things are happening. So it's a really exciting time. You know, it's going to be a busy summer in Sullivan County throughout the different townships and places. There'll always be something happening.
Well, we're talking to Christina, the Coshecton Town historian, about the upcoming events that are happening in Coshecton and also Sullivan County. So, Christina, thank you so much for talking to us. I do really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you for this interview. Wishing everyone a fun and safe summer as we celebrate America's 250th birthday.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Robayo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio, for that interview. Thank you, listener, for being here with me. I'm Jason Dole, and that's it for tonight's local edition. Before we go, I want to thank everybody that came out to our event at Lou Beach Community House, or Kingfisher Project's Bill Williams gave a very moving talk. Thank you to everybody who did that. And I want to give a big shout out to everybody, and there was a lot of them, everybody who was out at the Too Short to Suck Film Festival at New Memories in Parksville, also happening on Saturday evening. It was phenomenal seeing all the creativity in the many, many short films there. So grateful to be invited back to be there for that. So just wanted to let you know there's wild creativity in the Catskill Mountains and Northeast Pennsylvania, and I see it and we love it. So thank you so much for that. Hey, coming up, more news directly from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville Radio.